This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
I'll leave you with this with Dustin Chaffin.
Please subscribe to our Patreon page. You can hear all kinds of extras with TJ Miller on the road and Hell Gig stories and behind the scenes of a comedy club in Manhattan. So please support that. I could really use your support. So if you like this podcast, please sign up for Patreon page. It's only like $2 and you can really kind of get some extra stuff that I want to try to add. It's even getting better and better each week. So please support us and I'll give back, I promise. All right. How's it going?
I'm good. How's it going with you?
You know, I'm okay. I had a crazy road gig this weekend. It's so funny. There's this thing that happens that I know that you, I'm sure, has happened to you a lot. And you know that thing where you get off stage and then there's like a moment that you have with the other comic that goes up after you, you know, where they say something, you know, and then it's just like, and you have that thing in your head and you're just like, what the, you know, and sometimes, you know, I you know, you don't want to yell out because then you look like a psycho, you know, but there's nothing you could do because they have the microphone and then they say stuff. I'm sure, you know, a comedian being a female is, you know, you're always getting some weird stuff probably sometimes. But I always get stuff either about my material or, you know, whatnot. It hadn't happened in a while. But I got this gig, and it's in Jersey, which already just sets it up for, you know, something that could go either way at all times whenever you play somewhere in Jersey. And, you know, I'm opening for a Johnny Cash impersonator. So it's almost a dream come true.
Right.
It's like, it's so close.
Almost there.
It's so close. It's almost there. Because everybody knows I'm a big Johnny Cash guy. And so it was so funny, and it was just such a weird thing. You know when you walk in to do a road gig, and then you just you glance where you're going to be and where the audience is going to be. You just know it's just not right.
And you're like, this is going to be a shit show.
Yeah, you just know the way it's set up is just going to just not work. And you're going to really have to it's a challenging thing you're going to have to work on. You're going to have to work for the laughs. You're going to have to do everything. You know, so this thing was like a dance floor, which I have flashbacks from bad experiences where the dance floor was too far away from the audience, and then the comedians there, and so they had like a stage for Johnny Cash, and before that, actually, it was the funniest thing. I showed up with my buddy Paul, and we walked in, and then this guy, I mean, looks just like Johnny Cash, and he talks like him, and he looked, and it was like, I mean, I got like goosebumps how much he resembled Johnny Cash. And I walked in, I was like, oh my gosh, he looks just like him. And then the guy was like, yeah, that's the point. And I was like, okay.
You're like, okay.
Yeah, some dick. I was like, no, there's a lot of people that impersonate people, you know.
That's like when I was doing that, I did a magic show, not to interrupt, but I did totally interrupt. I was doing it in a magic show. I wasn't it. And yeah. One of the magicians was just so great. He had like 30 birds coming out of nowhere. And I was like clapping. I was being supportive. The guy standing next to me goes, you know, those birds aren't really magic, right?
Like, yeah. Like
he's like, you know, they're in his jacket, right? And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
I got it.
I thought he was a wizard.
Yeah. Yeah. is that Gandalf? Who are these people?
Yeah, that's always a weird thing when somebody's like smart aleck before the show's even started.
Yeah, you're like, I was just trying to be supportive.
Yeah, you just know it's, yeah, I hate it when people try to like ruin your fun, you know, because it's like, that's all it is, fun. So I'm having fun that he's Johnny Cash.
He's crushing your joy.
Yes, I'm so happy with this experience, you know, and this is before I, you know, see the room, and the room wasn't that bad. It was like, there was people there. The only thing is, most people that go to a Johnny Cash concert are going to be in your senior area. You know, let's just say I did a lot of Boca Raton references, you know, with this crowd. So they're up there. They're 80 plus. I'm not being, maybe 90 plus. There was some heavy old people in there and elderly, and I love the elderly, but this was, wow, this is a lot all at once. And so I look around, and it's like one of those things where he's like, oh yeah, the cord's not very long on the microphone. So, and then he's just like, yeah, you're going to be right here on the dance floor. So at least it wasn't on the stage far away. But, you know, whenever there's no stage, you're just like, oh man, you just feel like, you know, like it's just, it takes the element of stand up away because you're not elevated. Mm-hmm. So there's not that respect of like, this comic is in this space and like we have to listen. It's like you're just right by their chair, you know? So it's like this weird element that's already happening. And then there's people behind me. So I can't just, you know, I have to turn around the whole time. So I'm doing spins the whole time I'm doing my comedy.
They're in the round.
Yeah, I'm just turning around. But and I have a cord, so I can't even really go off, you know. I can't just run to a table. So I'm doing this thing, and it's just like, you know, it's one of those things when people tell you to be clean, but you forgot. You know?
Yeah. Oh, what? So sorry.
It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, but as you're doing the joke, you ever have a, you know, I know you know all about this, but like when you're
halfway through it and you remember what the end is.
So I try to say, suck a dick, but I say it like in a friendly family way. And then it was just like, it was, and I got good laughs.
I did a gig once where I just ended the joke before the ending.
Oh, before the punchline?
Yeah, and I was like, because I remembered what it was. And I was like, oh, you know. And then I went to the next thing.
They're like, what? Yeah, I don't know if that's better, but probably, you know, because at least you don't get in trouble.
Suck a pee-pee.
Yeah, it was like, it was so weird. And so I was just like trying to do this. And, you know, then I'm trying to do crowd work. And then, you know, I try to play with this one lady. And she's like in a wheelchair. And she's really old. And so I do this thing where I'm trying to play like, yeah, I need a sugar mama. And how many properties you have? And then I fucked up. I go, so what do you drive? And she's in a wheelchair. I'm like, I guess that's what you drive. And fortunately, the audience wasn't too bad on that. But so I had a couple jokes where I just kind of like, you know, it was the dirty-esque, you know, in the not edgy and kind of whatever, but I'd still try to pull back the whole time. And so I do the gig. And for this gig, it's a standing ovation for what I got out of them. You know what I mean? I put any comic, anybody in there, except maybe Sinbad or something. But otherwise, it's like I put anybody in that room and could do as good as I did. And so I was proud of myself. I was like, my buddy was there, and he said how great I did and everything. And then I get off, and Johnny Cash is like, hey, you did great. I'm like, Johnny Cash, I'm great. He's like, he's being all nice to me. That's another thing, too, when people like are like nice to you before they get on stage or something, and then they get on stage, and it's this whole other thing that happens. So he says, good job. All these people come up to me that were laughing. Some were not, but most were. And they're like, good job, fist pound, you know, that kind of thing. And then we're all excited to see Johnny Cash. You know, me and my buddy Paul, he picked me up in a 1989 police car. Like, we're doing the whole thing. We look like the Blues Brothers showing up in this thing. And we're all into it, you know. And then Johnny Cash gets on stage. And he's just like, hello, I'm Johnny Cash. And he's just full character. Like, he's not breaking. He's not like, hi, my name's Tom. I'm playing Johnny tonight. Like, he's in full Johnny. And then he's just like, oh, how about that comedian over there? He's a little too dirty, don't you think? Man, I think I'm going to have to go to church tomorrow. Oh, where is he? And meanwhile, I'm in the, like, I didn't go right in. I told my buddy to go in. And so I'm in the, like, the lobby area. It's in a hotel. First of all, it's in an Asian diner that has a ballroom connected to a hotel. So there's a Chinese restaurant. So I got wings. So I'm eating wings, just eating them. And then but I can hear the whole show. And then Johnny's like, where'd that comedian go? He probably left with his tail between his legs. And I'm like, get so angry. So I run in there and I go, fuck you, Johnny Cash. As loud as I could. I'm just flipping him off, like, because, you know, Johnny's famous for the bird. So I'm just like, fuck you, Johnny Cash. And then I was just like, I go, at least I write my own shit. And then I leave, and I'm like, what? So I'm just like a maniac. And I've gotten better at my mania, because it's like, it only lasts about a minute. And then I felt bad, and then like everybody was like, what is happening right now? And they're just like, what? And then he goes into, you know, Ring of Fire, and I'm like, just instant, like, enthralled, and I'm a fan, and like, Johnny rocks, and everything was fine. And I never brought it up to him when he went off stage. He did a great, like, he did stories in between the songs. So he was great. But it was just that moment where I couldn't believe that it wasn't just some comic at a comedy club. It was this guy who, you know, in my head was Johnny Cash that night, you know, was telling me I was too
dirty. We're going to call him Bonnie Rash from now on.
Bonnie Rash.
Because as a, you know, my therapist would say, obviously, you just felt insecure because you did so well. And then so
yeah.
He had to put you down a little bit.
That's what makes me mad is when you know what you're capable of, and you know what you're given and how well you do.
You feel good about it, and someone insults you in front of other people.
Yeah.
It's also really just a trashy move. Like, he looks like a poo-poo face.
He really does. And yeah, I have a hard time. I mean, I'm not going to burn my records, but you know, I'm definitely, I'm going to take a couple weeks before I put a Johnny Cash shirt on. I'm definitely going to wait a while before I listen to some Johnny Cash. And he told me he's going to play Hurt, and he never played Hurt. So I was very disappointed. And then afterwards, I just said, great job. And he had that look in his eye like I was going to pop him. And I was like, nah, that's cool, dude. I know what you did, and you know what I did. But, you know, respect to Johnny. I'm not going to, you know, fight you in the parking lot.
So, I might fight him in the parking lot. That's so rude. Yeah. I hate it when people comment on you when you've left the stage.
Yeah, it's because there's nothing you can do. You're, like, helpless.
Yeah.
It's like you can't. It's not like you're going back up.
Which is a dick move.
It is a dick move. It's like, leave the art. Let the artists do what they got to do and respect whatever they did. Unless,
yeah.
You know, it's like, unless I pull my dick out, it's like, I think I did okay.
Yeah, unless, like, you something know? Needs to be addressed because, yeah. Like, you, like, set a fire in the room and then peed on it.
Oh, here's the best part. I didn't even go up right. He didn't even go up right after me.
Yeah,
there was
a
whole
break.
Band. There was a band before.
Oh, wow.
Band right after me. So it was a whole band doing Kenny Rogers and stuff. And I was like, make fun of, you know, say, hey, that band. He didn't even say anything about the band. He was right to me. So it just, you know, even an impersonator is going to, like, mess with you sometimes. You think it's only comedians that are just jaded comics in a comedy club. But anyway, beware, guys, if you open for an impersonator.
If you open for Johnny Cash.
But you think of all the good things after, because my buddy was like, you should have, because he heckled you in character, you should have heckled back in character. Instead of saying, write my own stuff, you should have been like, I fuck June, you know. but you think all that when you leave, you know. But, so yeah.
I'm sure we can find where he is right now. Just go heckle him there.
Yeah, there's only got to be, there's probably three places that have Johnny Cash impersonators. But he's from Bronson, so he's kind of the real deal. But he also plays Gene Simmons and Elvis, and so, I don't know. It'd have been more fun, I think, if he was Gene. But Johnny just took it as a little, I don't know. It was just one of those things that, like, as comics, you know, like, all the therapy that we do and all the work on ourselves, you try to, like, just in that moment, you're just trying to, like, okay, they hadn't paid me yet. Okay.
Right. I can. This is not about me. This person acting out their issues.
It's like, how bad do I need $300? Pretty bad. You know, you're just like in your head, there's all these things going in your head. And I don't, you know, because then it's like, you just don't want that reputation of it going horribly.
Right.
Because even if it's like they say he was too dirty, that's still better than, you know,
he
punched
said,
Johnny.
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, he punched Johnny Cash. He broke Johnny Cash.
Like, are you ready for a burning ring of fire? And then you just dump gasoline.
Hurt. I'll show you hurt. I didn't break his guitar on his head.
I mean, that seems like a win.
I think so. So I felt good about it. But yeah, it's just it's an interesting thing how, you know, just we have to just deal with all these things. Do you have experiences where you've had to kind of, like, just keep it together when something, like, just goes wrong that you see happening as it's happening? You have to almost matrix yourself into, like, getting through it.
It's so hard to pick.
That's right, kids out there. Try and stand-up comedy. There's a lot of this that happens.
As soon as I tell one, I know I've got to remember one that was so much worse.
Yeah.
This one's fairly recent. And, you know, I like to say up top, I always appreciate the work.
Sure, me too.
Thank you for the work.
Yeah, yeah. And thank you, Johnny Cash, people that booked me on that. I'm very happy to have the gig. that's how we... That is, ugh.
I also would like to say that, like you said, when you walk into a room, sometimes you're like, okay, I'm just going to go... I'm going to do my stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pull my feelings and self-worth out of this. And I'm not going to expect anything. I just... This is what this is. And you know it when you just see the layout of the room. So I got to this gig... we'll say this was in the past year. I'm just going to put this in this time frame. And it was far away on a weekend. So we had to leave extra time because of traffic.
Yeah.
And then they wanted us there early. And then there was no food at the gig. So, you know, you're adding in extra time. And I was like, oh, once we get off the highway, I'll find food. There was no food because we're, like, way out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So by the time I got there, I was like, I have to eat something. I can't do...
What is your pre-show? Do you have, like, a thing, like, your checklist?
I like to eat... I need to eat, like, a little something, like an apple or some peanuts or a cashew, like something like that.
Yeah.
And then I need water.
Okay.
But I just need, like, enough that's, like, energizing but not heavy. And then I need a little chapstick.
Chapstick.
And I need to, I always like to have a tissue. I have a chronic paranoia that I have boogers.
Me too. Don't you hate when you're on stage and you feel it
you're
in there?
Like, there
and you know
booger?
They're all looking at it. Yeah. You just, it doesn't matter.
I just address it. I'll be like, I feel like I have a booger. Because if you try to blow it, it'll be worse. And yeah. I always change my socks on a road gig.
Yeah. I like fresh underwear.
I like
socks.
A fresh sock. I also like to have socks that don't cover my ankles in the summer months.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I like to feel that.
You have
air.
Lucky socks?
Yeah. I have socks that I feel socks very you've crushed confident in. Yeah. Yeah, and I changed my panties because I've been sitting in a car.
Okay.
And I'm like a fresh panty.
It's a family show.
Usually when I'm in a car, I like to wear a sweatpant, and then I put on my show panties with my show pants.
Okay. All right.
So I got to this place, and I was like, this place doesn't deserve the show panties.
No,
but
a
I
lot
put
of
them on anyway. Okay. The waitress didn't want to serve the comics.
Mm, that's nice.
Because they thought she said openly to our faces it would be a waste of her time. I always, I've been a waitress, even if I wasn't a waitress, let's just say I cleaned rooms and then I got bumped up to dishwasher and then I got bumped up to breakfast chef and then I got bumped up to waitress. So I have done every angle of the service
paid
industry.
Your dues in the service industry.
I extra tip. Like I'm a great.
Me too. Why not?
And I feel like most comics do.
Yeah.
So we couldn't even get food. And then this place had, I would like to say again, I'm real thankful for the gig. I'm a people pleaser as well. And I knew the person who put it together wanted the show to go well. So then I feel like it's on me or whatever. And also I often feel as a female comic, like you represent all female. People are always like, you're the only woman we've ever had. You know what I mean? So then if you do bad, there won't be a woman again for 7 years. You know what I mean? So it's all this. There's a tree in the middle of the performance area.
I have this feeling. Yeah.
So you're like, this doesn't seem like it's going to go well. And then it was a very bright room. So they were like, we didn't put the lights up. But between the other people going up and then me going up to close, the sun went down. So as I'm doing my stand up, the lights basically go down.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just doing jokes in the dark. And then a kid runs in from I don't know where and stands in the middle of the floor and just starts screaming and nobody deals with it. And then the waitress who earlier used to bring me food, this was the part where I thought this may be the end.
Yeah.
I'm tanking, by the way.
How'd they bring you up? Was that fun?
I may have told this story when it happened because I was very upset to the people listening. I possibly got booed in my intro. Oh, my God. I almost killed myself.
Yeah.
And it wasn't dealt with. You know what I mean? People were just like, no. So I just went up to it.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck in this place where you want to make everybody, you know, you want it to go well. You can't just like just burn right at the beginning, just burn it up and then be like, I'm going to stand here for another, you know what I mean? So you're like trying to do it. And then the waitress who was angry at me for some reason that I cannot begin to understand. And my therapist would say, you know, don't try to understand crazy because they're crazy. Stood directly in front of me. There's no tables there.
Yeah.
There's a tree there. So just, she didn't do it to the other comics on the show who were men, but as a side note, maybe that's not related, but it seems to be directly in front of me. And I'm talking, how many inches do you think that is?
About 5 inches.
5 inches in front of me, just between me and the people in the tree.
The tree.
It was like, and she did it more than once. And it was so close that I felt like I wanted to push her. Like if it was in New York, I would have said something or like checked the person with my shoulder. It was unbelievable. It was just like no lighting. You know what I mean? And you're like, I don't know if I can do this. There was like things going wrong in my personal life at the time. You know what I mean? I had sad things happening in the audience. And you want to be like, do you know what's going on? I'm a human being. And I'm standing in the dark with a tree and the waitress who won't even let me pay for food. You just want to just melt down. But you're like, hey, do you want to hear a joke I have about intercourse? And then like right in the middle, it was a very, you know, I walk on stage and people are like liberal. You know what I mean? It's just, in my hair. People can just tell. And sometimes when I'm out, you know, I have a lot of like jokes that are just, I think, relate to people on like a personal level.
Sure.
You know, a lot of like dating stuff, family stuff. Even I like telling all these stories about books I like to read.
Yeah, yeah.
So then halfway through it, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to do some jokes for me because, you know, and I did birth control, you know what I mean? Stuff where I was like, these people.
Yeah.
And I did it anyway. Just because I was like, you hate me.
Yeah, it is funny that thing that happens. It's like when they they don't like me is usually when I go as edgy as I can.
I usually don't. Yeah. Usually yeah. I'm like, hey, I'm going to figure out
a way to
make this work.
Before I get to there, I try that.
But then I was like, between the tree and the lighting and this lady standing in front of me, well, now you're getting the birth control step. And then it was like one of those ones where you just want to run to the car because you're like afraid to make eye. I didn't want to go to the bathroom because I didn't want to be in there with people from the audience. So I like kept my show panties on the whole night, the ride home.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than like, I don't know if you do a lot of merch and stuff, but I'm slowly starting to get into merch. And it's so funny, like when you have a set you just hate or whatever, and then just stand there and watch everybody just walk by your merch table and not say a word but tell the feature how great he was, you know, or how great she was or whatever. And you're just like, really? Okay, it's okay. And then you just pack it up real quick.
I was like, we're running to the car. And then I was like, I just need to get the nearest place where there's ice cream. And we pulled it over to a, you know, one of those on the highway stations.
Yeah.
And they had our Carvel. I've never had our Carvel in my life.
Carvel will make it feel better.
I ordered the biggest one and it had the man working there was like, I have to get the how-to menu out. No one's ever ordered this. It was like the size of someone's arm.
Bringing another employee. we're going to need somebody else to help us lift this cup.
I was like, my feelings were really hurt. But it was, you know, was what it is. And, you know, grateful for the work. And
it's amazing. Ice cream can definitely make the set feel a little bit better. You know what I mean? Like I do that. I'll have to lap. I'll get something sugary and then I'll just take laps like around a block or wherever I'm at. I'll just walk.
I'm sure I came home and watched Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's kind of your go-to. <right? laughs>
But I, you know, it's just sort of that combination of like really trying. I was really trying to make it work and, you know, do my, and then you just feel like everybody was working against you.
Yeah.
And then to have somebody be mean for no reason.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when people don't understand that like certain things really make a difference, like lights, you know what I mean? And you're like,
no tree.
Yeah. So you're just like, I'm really trying.
The funniest thing is I think I told it a couple episodes ago, but it was like, yeah, I had a tree situation too, where I had a tree in front of where we were doing the parking lot. We didn't even have a stage. We had a parking lot, literally in the parking lot. And then it was a tree. And then we had to like lean over the side of the tree just to get to the audience because it was in a gated thing. So it was like, it was the only way. They just felt like it was the most centered place to put us in front of this tree. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I just shit on the whole thing the whole time. I couldn't even do material. I just made fun of this setup. You know, it's the only thing I could do to make it like funny because you can't do jokes, you know, when it's like the atmosphere is wrong.
Oh, it's so weird. It's like, and I had tried, actually. Yeah. I was like, hey, what? You know, and then you just like hate yourself more. You're like, what? Your mom's still not going to compliment you no matter how much you try to work these people. I'm kidding. My parents have been really great. I, Mom, if you're listening, you just really.
Yeah, she might actually listen to this one. But this is, but you know, sometimes comedy is amazing.
Amazing.
And sometimes it's just challenging, as I like to say. And I like the word challenging better than bad because unfortunately, you and I talked a little bit before, and it was just like sometimes it takes crazy gigs and you know, road stuff that you just can't believe that you did, and like,
or you're like, a whole group of people hate me. I can't fix it for that whole there's a whole town of people that think I'm I don't even know.
That's the worst, when it's like you have a set like that and then you have another set and it's amazing and you're just like, you just want to send them that video. Be like, this is what I do.
You
have no idea how good I am. You just think this is the comic I am, and it's not the comic I am. It's like a, you know, it's a misrepresentation.
This could have been better, but then you know, you get in your head, you're like, maybe that is the comic I am. Maybe that's what it is, and that's when the Carvel comes in.
Yeah, well, I think you're more than a tree comic with crappy people and a waitress that I think she sounds
like. She's so mean.
Yeah, it sounds like she had a thing for you or something. I don't know. It feels like, why would you be that close
to
somebody?
I think she's like angry at me. I got riled up. I was like, we're going to find this girl.
I'm going to seek you out. And I got to. I know you sometimes try to stay off like social media and stuff because you just have to. And I did a gig. It was at a casino and a couple months ago. And somebody literally went out of their way to find me, you know. And then you're like, that's so funny when people like you know, like add you on something to so they can send you a message like, oh, it's a fan, this is great, and only to add you so they could say something they didn't like about your show or something. And this lady, I did some joke on stage. I was just like, she got up and I was like, hey, look at you looking good or something. I was like playing around with like a flirty kind of silly, you know, and then she just emails like, you can't do that, Me Too movement, you can't. And I say, really, you can't? You know, it's like even in the jest of I'm have no interest in you whatsoever. You're like, you know, not the whole thing was ridiculous. That she sent me this whole long email about how I shouldn't, like, you know, make women feel like objects when, you know, they go to the bathroom or something. And it's like, you're getting up in the middle of my set, I'm gonna say something, I can't help it, you know. And then it was just this whole thing, and I just like got it. Anyway, but sometimes comedy's bad, and then sometimes it's amazing, or it's challenging, and then it's amazing. So you seem to have had pretty amazing moments in comedy. You had your television debut from the Stephen Colbert Show.
Oh, my goodness.
Ladies and gentlemen, Leah Bonema in the house. Yay.
Thank you.
How great is that? How amazing that this aired, and it's awesome, and it's like it was such a good set. I love the jokes that you chose. I feel like, you know, it was one of the more different late night sets that I've seen. I feel like, you know, there's definitely some good late night sets, but I feel a lot of them have a familiar feel to them, you know, whether it's just like almost like they're.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
You know, keeping it safe or whatever, and, you know, and kind of doing jokes about food or, you know, whatever it is. And
it's been some great late night jokes about food.
Food jokes are good. Food jokes are great. But I
love food.
I love food. But I really responded to the material you chose, which I felt was, you know, very current, very kind of in your face, yet sweet and fun and not like intrusive, but hey, wake up, you know, some things are happening in the world. But at the same time, you did personal stuff that was very, you know, kind of relatable and fun. And, you know, I felt like that had to been kind of, you know, just a process for you to figure out how to do that, how to put this set together. How did you go about just kind of like choosing the set for this? Was there a couple different sets? Was it, can you take us through the process a little bit of just, you know, kind of getting to that point where you have the set that you're working on for late night?
If I was to be honest, I never necessarily thought that I would be able to be a person who could have a late night set. Okay. Because I just was like, I'm long-winded. I don't think I'm necessarily dirty, but I'm talking about topics that are. And then I decided that I feel like this whole thing is going to sound like me being in a therapy. I decided that
what this is.
Yeah. That way of thinking is a ridiculous way to think. That I, you know what I mean? It's a helpful, important tool and a part of, you know, not that everybody has to do it, but like, yeah. It's definitely. So I kind of broke down I had two sets, I felt, and one was more of a long story. Like, I feel like Gary Gulman has that set I watched multiple times that was like one long chunk that I thought was fantastic. So I was like, oh, it has been done.
Yeah.
I have this one story about my CAT scan, which I love, and it's clean. And then I had this other chunk that was like some of my favorite jokes that was, you know, maybe more on the edgy side, but, you know, technically clean. And I think, you know, I think a lot of it late night said sort of you're saying this is me to an audience. So you have to get the description of yourself. So I wasn't sure if this was, but I think the tone of it describes the tone of who I am.
Okay.
You know, as opposed to being like, this is where I'm from and this is, but I feel like it, I was hoping that it, you know, kind of was a, express my personality enough to be as opposed to a who, what, where, when kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then so I had both of those sets, you know, taped.
Okay.
And then I like showed them to I'd been working on both of them. And then when I started talking to Jessica Pilot, who is booking The Late Show with Colbert, or she and I had known each other for a long time, and I sort of I don't know how other people do things, but I sort of am, you know, I never had really approached her about it. I know she'd seen my set, and I kind of was like, you know, I figured she would say something to me when she saw something that she liked. That's how I do things.
And that's what happened, right?
Yeah, she saw the one set, and that was the set she liked, and she was like, you know, I'd like to see that on tape.
Oh, great. So she, was it like at a Brooklyn room or something? Just like a little
It was a downtown room.
All right. And then so that's the thing, is it's like, that's why it's like you just never know.
Yeah.
You never know when your opportunity is going to open up. Like, that's why it's like, you know, you really have to kind of, not that you always have to bring it, but, you know, you still have to kind of be aware, especially if you knew she's in the audience, right? Or did you before
you
went on? That helps. I'm sure that changed a little bit of maybe the mindset. Of like, I'm just going to fuck around, or I'm going to like do a good set.
I mean,
set.
I did the, you know, I did a longer, less tight version of these jokes, but I felt like it was very much things that I did jokes that I loved.
Gotcha.
That I thought were very me.
Yeah.
And then I worked on getting her a tape of a tighter version.
Okay.
With less words. And then she was extremely helpful in moving it all around. And then we got, and, you know, obviously some of it had to come out, and what had to come out, and what, you know, and this was something that I, because I'm a more, I do a lot of long chunks, that I really worked on what words are unnecessary, mm-hmm. and are, were there little places where I could have a punch that I didn't have a punch?
Yeah.
And then also because I had to get rid of two things, I had to write a joke to get into the next thing, and then one of the jokes I wrote to get into the next thing I think became one of my favorite jokes on the set, which was the IUD Wi-Fi hotspot.
Oh, that's great.
I wrote that as a
kind of a
way
bridge
to get into the
between.
Next joke.
That's great. And how many times do you think you ran it before,
including the shower? I mean, I was...
I'm just curious how long one, you know, might run that, something like that, you know?
I ran it. I ran it, just running it for the 6 minutes, and then I would also run it in the middle of sets, like regular sets that I could get.
Gotcha.
So I could just run the set, and then I would also, if I was, like, doing a longer set somewhere that I'd already, I would put it at the end of that.
Because that's so much pressure to get, because that becomes, you know, just a whole nother thing late night. My first TV thing was Showtime, which was, they basically just said, do a set and we'll light you. That's really, I mean, there was really, no one came at the material, you know. Nobody said, hey, we have to, you can't do this or you can't do that. Or they just said, we like what we saw, and just, you know, get off stage. And when you see the flash card at 2 minutes, and, you know, that was it, you know. So it was like, you know, less stress from, like, you know, the network thing where you have to kind of like worry about, am I going to slip and say something, or, you know, or it has to be so tight, you know.
Yeah.
The timing of, like, the late night is, like, you know, seems like it has to, that's got to be a little stressful, just getting everything in that short amount of time.
Yeah. I was nervous that I would, I guess, these are the, what if I all of a sudden blanked?
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, I love talking to people in the audience. So I was like, what if I just can't stop myself? And then I said to myself, what if you can't control the words coming out of your mouth? Is that what you're saying right now? Yeah. So then I reminded myself, like, of course I'm a fully functioning human who can stop words from coming out of one's mouth. So I mean, I would just run it. I would just talk it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I would tell myself, This has been, the words have been chosen. It has gone through what it has to go through. I now just have to say it.
Yeah.
while I look like I'm comfortable with myself.
And this is, and this, here's the thing: is I saw the set, and a few of us were there live too as well. And you literally look like you were just doing a late show, like a comedy club late show. Like you just like were just, you know, your vibe did not come off, because a lot of people, you could tell they've rehearsed this thing 1,000 times, and so it feels robotic. And that's one thing I think that was great about your set, is that it felt just loose. Like your energy was loose. Like you know what I mean? Like it felt like you were just doing comedy, just another day at the comedy shop, you know, and you're just like, you're just kind of just doing a set. It really looked like that, which I think was very interesting. And Colbert has, you know, the way that they do it, I feel is pretty cool, because, you know, a lot of the late night shows, you know, you're there during the show and, you know, that kind of thing with the band, and what, you're the only comic, and it's like this thing where you know, it's like Bruce Willis is there and you got to like follow his funny story about his family or whatever. And then like, okay, it's comic time. And with this, they put a show together of like 6 or 7 comics. And then after that, they, you know, air the comics, you know, individually. But I think it's cool to feel that when you're doing stand up, like you're just on a show.
Yeah, it feels like a show. Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that I looked loose and like I was.
You did. You look great. You look very loose.
I wanted to.
Smiled a lot. It's
smile.
Great.
I did. I was like telling myself, like, this is, you know, everything I've worked for.
Yeah,
and I'm
great.
So grateful to be there. And, you know, what a cool theater, that amazing things. And to not let being afraid of getting over those feelings.
Yeah.
And then I also, the live audience is such a wonderful thing, because it's like, oh, this is what we do every night. And
yeah,
you walk out and you see those people. And I was like, thinking about the people.
Nice.
Not the cameras.
Awesome.
And you know, you make eye contact with people just like you do at a regular show. And there was actually a man in the middle who did not like me. And it actually made me feel so much calmer, because I was like, oh, I know this.
Yeah. At least there's not a tree.
I know this.
There's not a waitress in my face. Yeah, I can handle this.
Also, and then I was like, I'm going to win this guy over. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I actually got him at the end. But it, you know what I mean? It just was like a very real, this is a lot. This is a show where I'm conveying what I think is funny to me to these people right in front of me. And I want them to have fun. And, you know, I just tried to be the most in myself. I did have one moment. I think most comics can relate to this, where you're saying your stuff and then something happens that triggers the voices in the head.
Okay.
And they're going off on their own thing.
Oh, wow.
While your voice is still talking. You know what I mean? But the voices in here are talking on something else. And so I was like halfway through it and I wanted to be present. That was like my goal.
Yeah.
And my jacket started riding up.
Oh.
And I didn't want to pull on my clothes at all.
Yeah, that looks bad.
Because, yeah, once you start pulling, you can't stop pulling.
Yeah, that's a nervous tick. Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not when somebody, like, fixes something when it's, like, a live show. It's once you start doing it. And then also, it's like, I don't want people to think, oh, is she uncomfortable with it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't want to touch anything.
Yeah.
So I felt my hands start to rise up to pull my jacket, and then this very loud voice in my head goes, if you fucking touch that fucking jacket, I will take your hand and cut it the fuck off. and then I didn't touch my jacket. But then I must have gotten through a whole sentence while that voice was yelling at me in my head, and then I came right back into it. But that was the only time I lost being present. My goal was to be present, because that's one of the things I love most about stand-up, is that I feel that when I do stand-up is one of, because I'm such an anxious person, or I'm worried about how people are feeling, or like, does something need to get done? Stand-up, when it's, even when it's really bad, because then you're still present, but when it's really good is like when you're really in the moment.
Absolutely.
And I think that's how I feel, and I wanted to convey that feeling. I
was so in the moment. It was just like I said, it looked different. I've seen a lot of these things. I've been to live tapings, I've been to Letterman's and different ones, and this just felt that, you know, it just, that really came off. So I think
I was really into that.
Props.
I just rewatched it and I was like, I just love that I'm walking out waving. Like, I think I'm,
well, the viewers didn't get to see it, but she does a little dance that unfortunately wasn't in it, but at the end. But
you know, I had a neighbor growing up who made fun of the way I walked. You know,
oh, really?
When you're a kid, it really sticks in your head. He said I was a waddler.
What?
And so, it, you know, I just have that. I wrote a whole thing about trying to have a new walk. Yeah. Remember, I was trying to do that joke for a while. I was like, because in real life, I really decided I had to have a new walk. So I would go out every day and work on a new walk. Yeah, I was practicing. Actually, really throws your hips off because your body is like, yo, we've been walking like this for a long time.
Who? Do you know any famous people that have a good walk?
Oh, my. David Tennant.
Who's David Tennant?
David Tennant from,
oh, from
Broadchurch.
From Broadchurch.
His walks
yeah.
are always phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's
I don't
great.
Know what he walks like if he's just going out for bread.
Maybe it's an English thing. They just walk.
I don't know. I think that man has, he's got smooth hips.
Smooth hips. So he can walk a certain way.
Some people will just walk terrific. And sometimes really? I'll walk behind them and try to walk like them.
Wow, that's interesting. I think... yeah, I don't know. I dance a little bit. I walk to music a lot, so I'll dance and walk, you know.
If you dance and walk, I try to dance and walk. It's more fun. I don't want to slump and walk. You know, some people slump and walk.
Oh, yeah, I'm wearing a posture gear right now.
I noticed. Yeah. I thought you were coming in from your time on the force.
Yeah, I got this little thing that
For
I wear.
For those at home listening, it looks like a gun holster.
Yeah, it's my posture. I feel like I have such bad posture. I've really tried to work on it over the years. So I bought this little strap off Amazon. Another thing that I just don't need that I buy. But it's helped, though. I think I'm right. I set up a little better,
I think
right?
You look up very straight.
Well, with it on. But even with it off, I feel like it's gotten better. Have you noticed?
I definitely feel like you've sit up very straight.
You've been in the
I
green
feel
room?
Like when you stand up straight.
When I stand up straight?
Yep.
Yeah, right?
Definitely.
I think it's better. Anyway, it's helped my comedy, actually. I think when you're a little more wrecked.
Well, I think when you're standing
better.
Straight and confident in yourself, unless like your whole thing is being like a... You know, unless it's an intentional or like a part of your whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like a Woody Allen doesn't need to stand up straight.
Sure. It's part of almost the persona.
Yeah.
But with the walk, though, it's interesting. I never even noticed people's walk. Like I noticed
when somebody
struts.
I feel like I've been made fun of.
Really? Well, I think you have a nice walk. I've never noticed you having a bad walk.
I've been
walk.
Working on it for decades.
You have like a walk coach.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's a funny sketch. This guy's like, you're Mickey. He's like, you can walk better, kid.
So that's why I was like, I was very proud.
It was a great walk. It was a great walk. And I think the waving is good because the waving takes away from the walk.
Yeah, I just wanted to be like, here I am.
You're like the queen. You're like, hello.
Not only I'm so confident in my walk that I'm going to be like,
yeah,
I'm going to take questions.
It was so great, though. It was really, really, and you're also one of these people that, you know, as comics, we all root for. Like, you're a nice person. You care about other comedians. You're the person that shows up for people and, like, you know, album recordings and things. And, you know, you really are a delight, you know, in comedy. I think it's like I speak for lots of people that you're one of the good people. And I think it's like, you know, there's a lot of people that get stuff and you're like, this guy. And, you know, you're definitely one of those people that I don't think anybody's ever said
that's
is
so
going
nice.
To say that. You know, I think it's,
well, it's nice
we
you
root
say,
for
I
you.
Don't know if that's true, but I do feel very excited for, I do,
you do
try.
No, you do. You put a good energy out and I think it comes back.
I do
really
feel very
do.
Excited for people. And I think it's like an important thing, you know, if anybody, to support people that you like.
Absolutely.
Like I always try to buy everybody's albums and books because, you know, it's so cool that people achieve something they wanted, and I just want to
be a
part of it.
I also want this. I feel it should be a family. You know, I feel the comedy community is it's a rare breed of people, and so it's like we're the only people that really truly understand each other. You know, the rest of the world doesn't quite understand what we're doing. They act like they do, but they don't.
I was at this party, not with comics, and you know, I haven't felt this feeling in a long time where I felt wrong, you know, where you like say stuff and you're like, what the fuck, you know what I mean? So I was at this party and it was, you know, it was home and it was for a school that I went to, and I'm with this group of people, and I had just read this article that I thought was super interesting about how women's uteruses fall out. Okay. And I didn't know that. I didn't know this happened. So my mind is blown. So already I want to talk. Now that I say it out loud, I obviously know this is not a dinner conversation.
It's a green room conversation.
Yeah, but it's not.
Yeah.
And then so we're with this group of, nobody's talking to each other.
Yeah.
And I'm trying.
To get it going.
Yeah. Someone's a doctor and there's a lady who is a dancer. So I was like,
boom.
Boom. Because in the article, they talked about women who, more athletic women, this was a thing struggled with, and there was doctors, and I was like, oh, Nobody was talking. Everybody was uncomfortable. I thought I was bringing people together. We could have a conversation. I bring up this article. I cleared the fucking room. And I genuinely meant it as like a thing that everybody could talk about. And I felt stupid. Yeah. And like there was like I embarrassed people. And then I remembered feeling this way. And then I was like, oh, this is because I actually fit in with this group of people. Yeah. Like I can say those things on stage and then it's a joke as opposed to just being mortifying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, but with comics, like I know we can say stuff and it's never, people are just like, no. That's just a thing that someone just, you know, it's,
yeah, it's in your brain. You want to work it out. Maybe a bit, maybe
not. It's not a bit. It's just a thing you read that, and people, I don't feel weird anymore. So that is a real gift.
Yeah.
Cause I remember not having that place.
Yeah, I bet now you could go back since you've been on Colbert and you could really like open up about the uterus thing.
This was fairly recently. This was fairly recently. I think they would still be mortified. It was more that feeling of just being like,
and it's a small town,
thinking that you can talk about, that you're talking about things that other people, you know, and then you're just not, and everybody, you know, and then so it's nice to find a group of people who are, we're all damaged in the same way.
I was home recently and it was, you know, my dad and all the stuff I was going through, and it was like, you know, I've you know, you're around comics so much, you know, and I forget, like when you leave New York City, it's a whole nother thing, not even just comedy, just leaving New York. I feel like sometimes with me, you know, going back down south, and everybody just like was heavy into like, you know, right wing stuff and like going off and like being like racist and stuff. And I was like, whoa, we don't do that anymore, you know. But then I remember, oh, I guess they still do it. You know, that's the thing, is you get spoiled in New York where you can.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online, schedule package pickups through the dashboard, and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Kind of be, you know, not have to worry about certain elements of things people are going to talk about, because you feel like this is, you know, a place where we're kind of in tune to the world and what's happening and sensitivity and whatnot. And but it was just like, I literally had to leave the barbecue. I was like, I gotta go, I can't like listen to this right now. But between that and trying to get my drunk brother, keep my drunk brother from peeing in the yard. Yeah, white trash. But yeah, so that's really cool. And you grew up in Maine.
I grew up in the Maine, so I've peed in the woods.
You peed in the woods, but not in a yard, you know.
I'm sure I peed in a yard.
Yeah.
Well, but like on the edge.
On the edge of the yard.
You know, it's near the woods.
But yeah, that's going to be very exciting that, you know, it's like you come from such a small place. You
Everybody's
know?
Been very supportive about.
Back home?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have like. Yeah, it's like a probably have a statue of you or something like Rocky. You're gonna you're gonna be the Rocky of Bethel, Maine. But that's so cool though. Very excited. You know, I feel like it's like it's well earned. You know,
I've watched you
really work this thing out, and it's
thank
great.
Thank you. And I very very genuinely grateful to Jessica, because I feel like she. You know, sometimes when you're like, oh, here's a set that maybe could it, you know what I mean? And she really worked with it with me. And, you know, I felt like I got to present myself.
Yeah.
So I was very grateful. And I felt like she really pushed for me.
And comedy's been really easy for you, right? You got it. Like, nobody made you pay any dues. Yeah, you got it right away.
Yeah, I've only been doing this.
You don't have to say. I never say my comedy years. I always make it like, I'm like more than nine. That's what I say.
I'm happy to say more than 10. We're looking over 10. You know, we're and past you, 10 and we're.
So you started out barking a little bit and doing all that stuff.
So I was doing, before I did stand-up, I did a myriad of performance arts.
Might have to mention one of them.
We could say I wanted to be an electro singer.
What's that?
It was like I wanted to speak over beats.
Ooh.
Then I joined a...
is that a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Who, is there a famous person that does that?
Yeah, they're mostly out of Berlin.
Oh, I don't know.
And then I joined a spoken word group.
Ooh.
And I was into slam poetry.
Okay.
And then in that... period. You know, I actually went to college. I wanted to be a filmmaker.
Okay.
Not I actually went to college. I mean, obviously everybody knows I went to the Harvard of Canada, but I
yeah, we all know.
Did I mention that I went to the Harvard of Canada on math achievements? But I sorry, I don't know if that was brought up. But I so I was in this spoke, you know, so I wrote a lot of slam poetry and I performed a lot of it. And then I met a woman who was a director.
Yeah.
And together we she had a grant,
yeah,
and she asked to do a show with me. So I wrote this show. It was called Always With the Heart, Never With the Mind.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of my poems that were money comedic.
Yeah.
And then it was a story about coming to New York from a small town. I actually had a lot of Lord of the Rings references. So
nice.
It's been true through the whole from the beginning.
Yeah.
And then she asked me to take a stand up class in the middle of it to like learn how to punch stuff up.
Oh, wow.
So I did.
Okay. And then you just kind of started falling
and
in love with
I
it.
And then I was like, oh, this is everything, right? Because you get
great.
To talk about what you want to talk about. You get to try to like sneaky things by people that they might not agree with. And then they laugh.
That's great.
And it's like a place for like all your wild thoughts. Because every time I say something that I don't mean to be embarrassing, I say it because I feel like other people must be struggling with those thoughts too.
Yeah.
So it's like sort of to form a community of like, didn't you guys feel this way?
I mean, this sounds like just a very organic transition into stand-up, you know, where it's just like, I did no acting, no poetry, no music, no anything. It was just basically, you know, I just grabbed the mic for the first time. It was the first time I did anything like that. So it's like, it sounds like this is a great journey that you took, you know, to get to stand-up, because everything is kind of close to it as you're doing it.
Yeah, I slowly
like
moved into
slam poetry
it.
And the thing. Do you remember any lines from your slam poetry? Do you remember any?
Oh, I had one about spare change. It was about guys asking you for money, and this guy asked me for my panties. Spare change. Oh, then I had one about this guy that always in my stairway always wanted to fuck, and then every time I didn't want to, he'd be like, do you have your period? And then I wrote a whole thing about if guys had their periods, which at the time wasn't hacky. And, and then I actually talked about man pee, and I talked about how he like men leaned up against the wall. I mean, it was very descriptive.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I had, you know, angry poems about when people follow you home at night. I still have a compilation of my poetry.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay. So we can play that with
it's
this.
Trademarked.
Oh, it's
and
trademarked.
In case it ever and if everybody wants to bring back my I had a whole thing ode to Bostello coffee.
Oh, wow.
You know,
good coffee.
It's
good coffee.
Terrific. And spare change. I remember it. And
okay.
Then, yeah, so they were, a lot of them were already funny. And then, so I took that class and then we had a run with the show. So I was like, after that's done, I'm going to throw myself into this.
Okay.
So then I really like classes because I feel like it sets up, it introduces a world to you where it gives you the information on like the how to's, you know,
sure.
Like what are mics? What is how do I even just like getting on the stage, like holding the mic?
Yeah.
This is what a basic structure, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it gives you information and it provides you with, you have to see that person again.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to work on it. So it's like setting up. So then I took a second class after the show was over.
Nice.
And then at that class, I made friends.
Great. It's good to have comedy friends.
Yeah. And then they were like, hey, there's this club. It was Comedy Village.
Which was the Boston originally. Yes.
Yeah. And they, first I flyered for Broadway.
Oh, Broadway Comic. Okay.
I worked the door and Aaron Haber.
The cafe, I guess.
It was called the World.
The World. It was next to the upstairs of Broadway, like next door. They had two rooms.
I flyered in Times Square.
Oh, wow. I did that too, yeah.
Like 2 hours a night, 2.5 hours a night.
Yeah, that's a good way to meet men, huh?
And I'm not a good flyer because I feel like I'm bothering people.
You're like, hi, I'm sorry.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
So sorry.
Can I please?
It's not my skill
please,
set.
Please, could you just take this?
So I was much better working a door.
Okay.
So then I heard, oh, this person, downtown.
Yeah.
There. So I think I was there like 5-6 nights a week.
Yeah, that's where I met you.
Yeah. And I would flyer, and then I would work the door.
Yeah.
I think I went there at like 4:30. I went straight from my job.
You were like ran it pretty much.
Yeah. And
like
then
you were doing a lot.
Yeah, I ran it. I ran.
I think you were checking the emails.
Yeah,
like
I did the
emails.
I did the promotions. I ran the open mics. Yeah,
you were all
like
in.
6 nights. I got shingles because I was so overtired from that in my day job. And then so I would get 5 minutes at the end of every show.
That's all you need.
And of course I would, you know, you would just bomb. And then I got bumped up to hosting.
Nice. I feel like I saw you a little bit in the beginning, and I feel like the hosting was the best thing for you. I felt like once you started hosting, I felt like that's when you, it felt like you kind of started blossoming a little bit.
Yeah, because when I was just doing the, I was just doing a set. I was doing a set.
Yeah.
I was doing a set.
Very set. No,
yeah, and
very
then
like,
all of a sudden I was talking to people.
Yeah, I think that's what opened you up.
Yeah, that's where it changed.
Yeah, when you think of your early days, what transformations did you make that make you the comic that you are today? Like, what do you remember, choices that you made, or just kind of to be looser with the crowd, or to kind of like not be just so scripted, or
no? I honestly just remember just going and going.
Yeah.
And then just, I don't think I remember necessarily deliberate choices.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of feeling it out.
Did you feel, when I started, I felt like I resembled other comedians. Like I could, like I felt like I would study somebody, and then unfortunately I would kind of like mimic them a little bit on stage. Like I felt like, I don't know if there was any, like what influences did you have? Like did you listen to a lot of comedy and stuff, or?
I don't feel like I necessarily did that.
Yeah.
Because I came out of like more of a one person show.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's right. You did that too. So you did a one person show before you ever did stand up.
Yeah, that was the Always with a Heart.
Yeah.
That
was good. I saw it.
I have it on DVD.
If you want to sell those, you know,
we might be selling those. I mean my parents played comedy when I was younger, and then I had, when I was Chris Rock, Bigger and Blacker.
Yeah.
The VHS, there's actually two versions of it because I have the DVD and it is not the same taping as the VHS.
Oh, really? What's different about it?
The time, the pacing.
Really? Like it's a different set?
It's the same jokes, different timing.
So it must be a different set.
Yeah. Different set. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some more sketches in the DVD one.
Okay.
But the VHS one, I would play it when I would clean the apartment.
Okay.
And I mean, I had everyone that was like the, when you're waiting for your AIDS test and goes to Pussy Pass. Or with the white kids getting on the elevator. And then, you know, he would signify his punchlines sort of with his, his excitement at the end of it, and
okay.
I was obsessed with Chris Rock.
That's great. That's a good person to be obsessed with.
I don't really feel like when people watch me, they think.
I see a little bit. I see all of this, you know. Well, it's your own thing as well, but I see.
I obviously listen to a lot of Sam Kinison. I'm really into screaming.
Yeah, Kinison definitely was influenced for me as well. We talked about that early on, but I feel like
I even own a jacket.
You own a jacket,
like
Kinison jacket.
Yeah, like that trench coat.
Oh yeah, you were Sam Kinison.
I was Sam Kinison at Schtick or Treat.
Do you how do you feel about this is interesting to me. Like Sam Kinison, thinking of Sam Kinison's material now and in the day and age, you know, Eddie Murphy just publicly apologized for material that he did on Delirious and Raw.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he publicly apologized for the material that he did because he felt like it was insensitive and stuff. And I don't know. I feel like I don't feel that right about that. I feel like that's a time. It was a different time period. You know, unfortunately, maybe we weren't as sensitive as we should have been. But I feel like that material should just be left in that time. I don't think anybody needs to apologize for things that you said back then.
I think the material, it both can happen. I think the material can be appreciated for being very funny at the time.
Yeah.
And then also that he can recognize that how now that it comes off as hurtful.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be like I'm sorry I did that, but yeah. Now I'm sorry, I'm aware now.
Yeah, I guess. I feel see like what you're saying. It's a grown-up thing.
I haven't heard the apology, but I feel like it could, you know what I mean? He could just be like, I'm more aware now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he went in real hard among gay people and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, nobody talks like that anymore. So I think it's like a thing that, I think it's definitely both sides. You could see that, you know, because, I think he's probably trying to appeal to people because he's, you know, going to have a new special. So
he's sorry that he hurt people's feelings.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I think it's a little bit of both. I think the fact that he has a new special coming out, he probably doesn't want people to think that he's going to just, you know, do that stuff. You know, because people evolve, and I think he evolved as a person.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that you could say I've evolved, and that's an apology, but then that can exist in the time that it was.
Yeah.
So with Sam Kinison, there's always this thing that happens with comedy where I feel as a comic, I think comics do it. I think non-comics have struggled with it, where it's like I can disagree with someone or their point of view and still laugh at their jokes.
Okay.
If they sell me the world, I'm in it. You know what I mean? Even if I'm offended by it, I wouldn't say I'm offended by that, but I'd be like, I don't agree with that. You know what I mean? But it's still funny the way that you presented it.
Yeah. I still think about Sam Kinison. Like that, his material, I mean, to him as a comedian really just resonated with me forever. Like,
because he also comes off, I feel like the story is like he's horrible to women. And this
and they were horrible to him too.
Oh yeah, the stories come out of him being a hurt man.
Yeah, he was hurt.
So it's like this is, you know, and I'm not. It's I don't think about it as do I think this is okay? Da da da. But I'm like, this is a. I feel like you could see this damaged person who's like screaming out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll, you know, and I just, I feel like it was a show. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
There's so much.
Well, I think he resonated with that, you know, a lot of men that got their hearts broken and stuff. And one of my funniest things, he cheated on his girlfriend, and she acted like everything was cool. And she's like, oh, it's fine. No, it's good. You know, well, I forgive you. And then she put a gun in his luggage, and he went to the airport. And he's like, boo, boo. He's like, oh, man, what's going on? I'm going to see some shit. This is crazy. And he's all excited to see somebody else get caught. Handcuffed him at the airport because she put a loaded gun in
good
his
for
luggage.
Her. Good That's for her.
That's very funny. But, you know, it's you know, it's funny, too, is it's like, you know, we're doing this, you know, and that's what's cool, too, is when you like, you know, get to, you know, when you start to, you know, do something that your heroes did, you know, and I think that's really cool, too, that we're in this thing of comedy that, you know, that people we've like Kinison and stuff. And so it's really cool to be in New York City doing stand up.
Yeah.
You know, and just being a part of this history. Like we're our own history, you know, and it's a beautiful thing.
I was it's not a comic, but it's in the same feeling. I was like super depressed or like questioning what I was doing like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I got to go to a festival and Faith No More was on the festival. And, you know, I felt like I didn't know if I could, you know, hang in and what, you know, what I was supposed to be doing. And Faith No More was like, ugh, my fucking reason to etra in, you know, college or whatever. And end of high school. And I was on the same show as Faith No More. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
And they gave all the artists, not the same show, in the same festival. They gave all the artists. You had artist tickets, so you could go in the side. You have to wait in line.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe that I get to be, you know, in the same as, like, my childhood loves. And I was like, if I could go back and tell teenage me, who was a mess, by the way, that it's going to be, you're going to be on in a festival with Mike Patton performing things that came out of your mouth that you wrote, I wouldn't die as a teenager. You know what I mean? I'd be like, no way. You know what I mean? Did you get to keep your hair curly? Yeah. There was no curly hair when I grew up. And
I
was like,
awesome.
That's pretty cool. You know what I mean? And
then,
so
really
those
cool
moments where you're like, this is pretty cool.
No, that is cool. I almost had that Saturday, but it was almost Johnny Cash, and then he shit on me. But
Johnny Bash.
Johnny Pash. Johnny Rash. Johnny Rash. What are we going to call him? Well, I'm very excited for you, and thanks for doing this today.
Thanks for having me.
It's very cool. And
I just want to say again, I'm very happy for anybody who's had me on gigs, even if there was a tree.
I've done a lot of tree gigs, so yeah. No, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I'm after every gig that in our head is like bad or whatever, there's still that thing that says, you know what? It still beats being in a job you don't enjoy. It still beats like being in some sort of situation that, you know, drives you crazy and you just want to get out at 5 o'clock. You just want to run and get away from the office or whatever business you're in that you hate. A lot of people stay in jobs they don't like for their whole lives. So if the worst we got to deal with is a tree and some grumpy people, it's still a pretty good day at the end.
Yeah.
That somebody pays you to just say your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so very happy. We don't plug anything, any podcasts, or how we're going to catch you on Twitter and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, if you could check me out on Twitter, on my Twitter, my Instagram, my Facebook, all the same, at Leah Bonema, LEAHBONNEMA. Also, I'm co-hosting a podcast called Were You Raised by Wolves? And that is a manners podcast.
Manners.
It's about being polite to people.
Yeah.
And you could check out my Colbert online on the YouTube. So if you want to get in there, give it a little thumbs uppies.
Little thumbs uppies. What's a manner pet peeve? One off the top of your head.
I just get flooded and then I can't even think of one. I can't stand it when people just stop in front of you on the sidewalk and looking at their phones. It's
yes.
not just me. It's just like there's tons of people trying to go places. How can you not be aware of like 30 people and you just block all of them?
Yeah, I've seen them on the stairwells to the subway.
Stop on the stairs.
On the stairs. You're trying to walk down in a crowded subway.
I watched a lady watching a video and I was like, unless that's a video on how to walk on stairs, you need to just shut your fucking phone down. Are you out of your mind?
That's great.
I can't take it.
That's hilarious. So check out Raised by Wolves.
Were
You Raised by Wolves? Guess on Spotify, iTunes, all that good
yep.
stuff. Very cool. Very excited for you and congratulations. Yes, what?
Can I play one more thing?
Yes.
I raised my hand.
She's a plugger.
I'm just so excited to be here. It's really been a great week. I got to tell you, I've eaten a lot of shit for a lot of years and it's been a great week. I have a show at the New York Comedy Festival.
Very cool.
And Michael Costa and I are doing long sets on topics.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm doing a long set on books, and he's doing a long set on tennis.
Oh, that's great.
So you can just all
and
that.
He's from The Daily Show, right?
He's from The Daily
that's
Show.
That's great. Very cool.
So you can get all that information on my Instagram.
Yes, please go see Leah Bonema live. You won't regret it. She's a lot of fun. She's loose and in the moment, and you know, it's like it's a good time. So definitely check out Leah Bonema at all the comedy clubs in the city. Check out her podcast, Were You Raised by Wolves? And this has been a lot of fun. I'm Dustin Chafin. Please check us out on Patreon. We could really use your love. You can catch me at Governor's in Long Island. I'll be there in November 22nd and 23rd. Go to laughstub.com and get tickets, please. We got to sell it out and so we can come back next year. All right. I love you guys. That's it. Thank you. I'll leave you with this.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.